everyone. Welcome to Podcast Insider. My name is Todd Cochran. I'm joined by my co-host, Mr. Mike Dell. Mike, how you doing?
Doing great. Up here in the snowy white north.
Well, I'm in the semi-snowy south Michigan, southern Michigan. So I'm coming to you from Coldwater today versus Columbus, where I was last week. But I'll be in Columbus next week. So ping pong back and forth. But anyway, we got a great lineup for you today, everyone. We got some news for you, best practices, some blueberry specific news. We've got an interview with Gordon Firemark. He's a lawyer, entertainment lawyer out in Los Angeles. It does a podcast. He's been in the space a long time. And he's one of those guys that if you ever need some podcast legal advice, you'll want to reach out to him. But we'll have Gordon on for that interview I did with him right around the time the fires were going on in California. So the fires are out and Gordon's property is safe. But anyway, the interview was happening when he had a go bag ready to roll. Anyway, we've got some support stuff as well. So, hey, I'm going to open this back up. I don't know how many interviews we've still got in the can, but if you want to be on the Podcast Insider, just drop Mike or I or Mackenzie an email, and we'll get some recordings going. I know I had some people that have asked when they're going to drop because they've been waiting for their stuff. So I think we're still a little bit ahead. But
yeah, I think we got about a month's worth.
So they'll start clearing out soon. Cereal is for sale.
Yeah, the makers of cereal. I think, what do they call it? It's an official company, but anyway, yeah, they're shopping around. They were talking to the New York Times apparently about maybe them buying cereal or cereal productions. So that's an interesting development since cereal invented podcasting a couple years ago.
Yeah, that's a running joke. Yeah. You know, and also we started to see some stuff coming out of when iHeart had their awards thing where they talked about podcasting only being 10 years old. And I'm like, really?
Yeah, well, I've been doing that since before it existed then.
Yeah, some folks have got it in their head it's only 10 years, but we are at 15 years for those of you that don't know. Anyway, good for cereal. And I know that a lot of these networks are looking to cash. So we'll see what happens. But there's also a new women's network. What's that all about?
Yeah, Seneca Women Podcast Network. It's kind of Seneca Women is a group, and then Procter & Gamble is in on it somehow. And they've announced that they're launching their network. It's going to be all women-led and female voices around the world. And so that's pretty cool. They're launching with the support of founding partner Procter & Gamble Company. So Procter & Gamble are getting into sponsoring more podcasts. I know they, way back in the day, they sponsored a podcast, and that made really big news. So looks like they're getting a little more serious about that. And, their target demographic apparently is women.
Awesome. So another thing that's happening is that CNN, which I used to laugh at because I had CNNpodcast.com for a while. but I called it the Cochran News Network, but that didn't real fly well with the CNN team. But CNN's getting a little deeper into podcasting. So they're going to be launching a Jeffrey Epstein series.
Yeah.
And so that's interesting. They're planning to launch a dozen new podcasts. So
They're looking at what NBC is doing and kind of mimicking that a bit. And they're starting out with that podcast called the Jeffrey Epstein I Knew show. So that should be interesting to hear what their take on that. It sounds like that's a limited run thing. I can't imagine that being an ongoing concern.
Right.
But interesting that CNN is finally going to utilize that domain name.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. If they do use the domain name, that'll be, that's a question. Are they going to use the domain name? Or are they just going to have, they just wanted it. That's what it was.
Right. Nothing wrong with that, I guess. But all right.
So anyway, going back to our stack of stuff here. So a little bit going on in the news, not that much, but I want to talk about, and I don't know if we talked about it in the last episode or not, but talking about listener privacy and, Blueberry, we've kind of got, we've got this DNA that our listeners really don't need to be spied on. You know, we have all the information we will ever need through running demographic surveys. You can do that. You know, there's a tool for Blueberry provides every podcast host with us a ability to run a survey for your audience to be able to find out who they are, you know, male, female, married, kids with, you know, all the, you know, all those questions that you need to build a demographic profile on. And if you run one of those a year and then at the same time have your podcast stats, you get a pretty good idea who your audience is. And plus you get feedback from your audience and people sending comments. And, you know, you should know who your audience is. But, you know, it's that's just seems to be not enough for some advertisers. And I discovered something back in early January, I guess we're still in January, that really disturbed me. And I've had some email conversations back and forth with Chartable, and they have admitted that they're doing listener attribution in relation to ad buys. And I'm not going to go into the details of how they're doing that, but it's enough that makes me concerned enough that we are going to be negotiating a contract with Chartable for our podcast hosting customers to not have their listeners be tracked. I just I don't agree with it. I don't agree in a third party that isn't really disclosing. And at least it appears to us that they're not disclosing. I'm not saying, and that's what, kind of my opinion at this point. But maybe they are talking to individual podcasters and making sure that they're cool with this attribution data. You know, that is yet to be determined. But one thing that we and one of our competitors have decided is that we don't want our hosting customers to be tracked. Now, if you work out something independently with Chartable, I think that's going to be fine. But at the same time, as a default agreement, we're basically going to say that, you know, Chartable cannot track Blueberry hosting customer listeners if you're using their redirect. So, and that's just kind of our DNA here. And we ran a poll in our Blueberry podcasting group. And, you know, that group largely said we don't want our listeners, you know, basically have attribution data collected on them. And, you know, people will argue a lot of semantics about this, whether or not IP data is personally identifiable. But we made a company choice to be GDPR compliant and, of course, to follow with CCPA. And of course, there's about 9 to 12 additional states are coming on with new privacy rules. We just think it's better that we don't have, you know, we're already being tracked everywhere, being tracked on Amazon or Google and Facebook, but we've all opted in to that type of tracking. Our listeners really can't opt in. So if they would, I think we'd have, if there was a way, I don't think we'd have a problem then. You know, if the listener says, yeah, I'm cool with being tracked on, you know, the Podcast Insider, I think we'd be okay then with the attribution data. But I don't know, Mike, we didn't build a company this way. We didn't want listeners to be specifically tracked, or the word I like to use, it may be a little inflammatory, spied on.
Right. The thing is that podcast listening has always been an anonymous activity, or more or less anonymous, you know, any more than anything else is on the internet. But, And it's kind of, you know, it's like that. It's been that way all along. And, you know, maybe the advertisers don't like that. But, you know, what about the guy that wants to listen to a podcast about, say, you know, some political subject that he may not want anybody else to know that that's what he wants to listen to? You know, you go back to what's his name there that got deplatformed, you know, okay. You know, regardless of your politics, the guy still exists. And now if you're able to be tracked on that, you know, it's just, it gets creepier and creepier, I guess, is what I think of it.
You know, and I also think about it from some different perspectives too. Let's say you have someone that has not come out yet and they're LGBTQ+, and they are listening to an LGBTQ show, and if that data is tracked across, and then all of a sudden they're being marketed, you know, in a way that isn't appropriate, that basically says, oh, someone knows that my sexual preference, you know, is that right? And yeah. I'm not saying that is exactly what's going to happen here, because again, we're talking about advertising attribution and basically telling advertisers that, you know, so-and-so listened to so-and-so's show, or he had a sale because of so-and-so's show. You know, I think that that is, and again, not so-and-so, it's IP data, let me be clear. But we well know that IP data can be cross-referenced across many different platforms these days. And really, with just a few tools, they know who this person is. And we're not trying to say that this is what's happening at Chartable, because all they're saying right now is that they are doing listener attribution in relation to ad buys. But this data is very valuable. And if you don't have a business model where this is, you know, just me talking, if you don't have a business model where people are paying for a product, you are the product, and our listeners could be the product. And we don't want our listeners to be the product. And regardless of what's going on with that data. So just as an aside here, this is what we're going to do. We're going to negotiate a contract, same as one of our competitors did, to ensure that our listeners' IP data is not tracked unless you explicitly go in and say it's okay to them. And, you know, that's going to have to be a one-on-one conversation with you and them. But that is, you know, we're basically going to put protection in company-wide. And I think that's the important takeaway here.
Right. And like I said, you get tracked enough other places, you know, you don't need to add podcast listening to that. At least that's my theory on that. You know, it's like, you know, Amazon and Google and Facebook and all those places, but you opt into all of those things. And again, with podcast listening, you don't necessarily have that opportunity to opt in. So that's part of the problem.
And some of the folks have said, hey, I don't care. And, you know, I understand that's your prerogative, sure. But you know, it's an all or nothing thing for us. And we believe that we should, you know, take the high ground as much as we can here and basically protect listener privacy. So that's where we're at on that. We'll keep you informed. I don't know how long it's going to take this agreement together, and just be aware. I'm just sharing news of what we are going to do and what we're going to put in place. Let's talk about some Blueberry specific news. They've been working through bugs and stuff on PowerPress 8.2. So are they almost ready, Mike?
Yeah, I was talking to the team just this morning, and with any luck, we'll have it out today on Thursday. So, but, you know, at least by the end of the week, I'm guessing. And, you know, as we've talked about a few times now already, the main change is the episode box. And right after recording this episode, I'm going to do the video on how to operate that new box. So if you have any questions when the update does come, you just shoot an email to support, and we'll send you that video. But it's pretty easy. It's pretty self-explanatory. Chrissy did a great job helping the team lay that out in a way that's logical.
So hopefully, Mike, you'll be able to have that video ready. And if we have to, we'll put it up on the website, and that way we'll have a link to put people to.
Yeah, I'll stick it right in the show notes here.
Yeah, to see it real easily and to be able to see that demo and that instructional piece. 8.3 is going to be ready for beta soon. I know he's been working on that as well. So that's exciting. 8.3 is a big, 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 I mean, it's as big
it's
a
UI change. As
yeah. So a lot changes on 8.3. And of course, we're finally almost ready for the Spotify pass-through to be implemented. And what we've had to do is we had 1,000 or more shows that are using M4A as their audio recording. And audio, and basically what's been happening is up to this point is Spotify takes those feeds and they convert the M4A to an MP3. And when we go to pass-through, we're going to have to switch your M4A to an MP3, which is going to result in a new listing in your stats. So you're going to have an MP3 report. Basically, whatever your file name is, .m4a will be the same thing, file name /MP3, and the MP3 will specifically and only be going to Spotify. So you're going to get some true numbers, some true breakdowns of what's happening in Spotify for those of you that are doing M4A. Now, at the same time, those of you that are doing MP3s, the Spotify stuff will show up as well. and you'll be able to break that out through the different variety of platform options. But I think it's, and we're also working through some additional things too, as we think those of you that are on M4A initially may only have the last 50 or so episodes showing up in Spotify. And we're going to work to make that so that we get your entire feed. But there is a pretty heavy lift on our end to do all those conversions of the several thousand shows to make it ready for Spotify to be MP3. So I think initially about the first 50 episodes, we're working with the team aggressively to make sure that all your episodes are listed as they go into Spotify, because we know that's an important destination.
Hey, my suggestion, start producing an MP3.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the standard, you know, even though M4A, AAC, whatever, it may be technically slightly better. MP3 is the winner in the format contest. And, you know, the second major podcast destination right now is Spotify, and they take MP3. And otherwise, it's, you know, it's a conversion. In the conversion, that makes it worse anyway. So start with MP3, and we don't have to worry about that stuff. Now, there's no need to go back and change all your episodes either at this point. Just, you know, going forward, maybe switch to MP3.
And if you decide to stay with M4A, just understand we are converting it. That's the only way we can do it and go through pass-through. And so, you know, it's already been being converted. So Spotify is all, you know, what you hear on Spotify for your show, if you're doing M4A today, is MP3 on Spotify.
Yep.
So, you know, there's no difference here. That's what's happening on Spotify today. They're not playing your original M4A that you have put in your feed.
Right. And if you put an MP3 in your feed instead of an M4A, you get to pick the bitrate.
Yeah. Now that's the beauty part too, is there's not any re-encoding going on even on MP3s. Your bitrate will be delivered at the bitrate you so chose, and there's no monkey business going on the Spotify side. So that's cool. Actually, I guess we're ready to bring on Gordon. So we're at this segment now where we'll bring Gordon in for the interview, and we'll be back to talk support after Gordon's interview. Hey, insiders, and a welcome Gordon Firemark to the Podcast Insider, and we're going to be talking about of his shows they're doing. Gordon, you are in California, and you actually have the car packed because fires are all around you, right?
Yes, indeed. It's been an interesting couple of weeks.
So hopefully you will not have to evac while we're doing the show, so we'll keep our fingers
crossed.
Well,
hopefully not at all.
But anyway, that probably sets the time, and I know that Gordon's going to be on the one of the shows later on, so probably the fires will be out by the time you're on, but man, I just can't imagine. So let's go back. You know, you're a fixture in the podcasting space. I think a lot of people know you, but if they don't, why don't you give everyone a little 411 on who you are?
Well, I am hopefully becoming known as the podcast lawyer. I'm an entertainment and media lawyer by trade and training. Been practicing in that field for almost 30 years now. And I became a podcaster a little over 10 years ago and realized that there was a need for someone who knows this stuff and knows media. And so I've sort of carved out that little bit of territory for myself. And my podcast is called Entertainment Law Update, my main one.
So what year did you start your show?
You know, we started, it's just over 10 years ago. It was 2008 in April. And we do a monthly show, so it's not as many episodes as some, but it feels like longevity to me.
Yeah, so I think you officially qualify for OG status and being at 10 years here. So
yeah.
Why, you know, it's, you know, you, lawyers are usually pretty busy. I look at, you know, Barry Kantz is our CFO and internal counsel, and he's actually retired from practicing law, but he, you know, he takes care of our legal stuff. And
sure.
I know when he was working, he was just crushed. How did, you know, lawyers are busy. So how did you find, you know, why? First of all, how'd you find the time? Number two, why did you start a podcast? And what was the, you know, what was the genesis of getting started?
Well, you know, look, as a lawyer, especially when you're a solo practice lawyer like I am, you know, it's all me. And so you have to find the time to market your practice. You have to find the time to position yourself as the expert in the marketplace. And for me, I was blogging. I was writing a print newsletter as well, you know, for the first 10 years of my practice. And, you know, it was working great. Content marketing is the thing. And so when I kind of became enamored of the idea of podcasting, my first appearance on a show was as a guest expert for someone else's show about a video law. I realized that this was a great way to make lots of content and get it out there relatively quickly. And it's sort of for me, it's leverage. I'd much rather talk into a microphone than type a blog post.
Right.
So for me that, you know, it was just reallocating some time for that. And I've developed, because I had a background in radio television production, I developed a live to drive sort of workflow. So I don't really have to do any post-production editing. I choose not to, I should say. And, so for me, I can, once I record the episode, I can get it out in 15 or 20 minutes after we finish recording. So for me, the work is on the prep end, and that stuff I can do, you know, in the evenings, and I have a team that helps with that. So it's really not that time consuming.
You know, I think for business professionals, and I've talked to a lot here recently, just down at Texas PodCon, and they, it was almost all business folks. And, you know, I'm hearing huge success with those that are doing podcasts, seeing increases in revenue and, you know, direct sales because of the podcast. You know, so when you started the show and started putting it out there, what did it make a difference on your business?
Well, you know, originally it was sort of a strategic blunder, I think, but we created a show, and I have a co-host. We connect over Skype just like this. And we created the show with the intention of doing continuing legal education credit for our listeners. So it's targeted at lawyers and other professionals in the entertainment industry. And we figured we'd be selling them these credits. Well, it turned out it was a lot harder to get approved by all the states to give that credit. And then the lawyers just didn't seem to want it. They liked to listen, but they weren't buying the credit. So it didn't monetize the way we'd hoped. But what it has done is really positioned us as go-to experts in the field. And, you know, not a week goes by that I don't get a pretty good quality referral from somebody who listens to the show, has discovered us because of the show, and knows my areas of expertise and thinks of it that way. Plus, I've developed a practice as a podcast lawyer.
Right. So from the content that you're putting out then, how has that, how's your audience engagement then? You know, because you're obviously talking on some topics that are probably, I would imagine, sometimes topical, but sometimes you got to pull a topic from the hat and get into it. So you probably are looking at what's going on in the space, right?
Yeah. So our format is to do, you know, 8 to 10 summaries of cases and legal news stories in the entertainment space each month. And, you know, so we are talking at a fairly high level about legal principles and concepts that apply to this area, you know, copyrights, trademarks, contract issues in the space, antitrust, you know, the various stuff that comes up. And so, our audience is listening and engaged because it's their way of keeping up with the news in this field. Used to be that lawyers would get printouts of the cases, you know, when they were published in the big books that you see in you know, behind the lawyers, and they'd have to sit down and read them. And so we're sort of giving a shortcut for that you know, hitting the highlights. So they like it. They write into us and occasionally come with a recorded comment or something, and like to come on as guests sometimes too.
Sure. Do you do mostly solo shows, or do you have guests on a regular basis?
It's usually just the two of us, me and my co-host Tamara. And it makes for a nice banter back and forth. And we, you know, sort of take turns on who leads the summary and who comes in with the color commentary. But when we have stories where we know somebody who's an expert on the field or who's written something interesting about it, we'll bring them on as a guest. And usually they'll stay with us for the whole show and enjoy the exercise with the other cases and things too.
I might miss this. Is she a lawyer as well?
She is. She's a music attorney. Her name is Tamara Bennett. She's in the Dallas-Fort Worth metro area. And the way we met when we started the show, I decided I was going to do this thing. And I went on Twitter when I was one of the early adopters of that. That's me. I'm an early adopter.
Right.
Went on Twitter and let it be known that I was looking for someone who needed to be a woman, not in Los Angeles. I didn't want to be, you know, giving my direct competition a platform.
Sure.
And who did music stuff, because that's the area that I don't do that much work, generally record deals and publishing deals. And 5 or 6 people immediately commented, "Oh, you got to talk to Tamara." And so I reached out and we recorded a test show and it worked out well. And here we are 10 years later.
That's pretty amazing. And I hear a lot of different ways, different people find people to work in, you know, like my company, we're formed from people from that listen to my show. And you went out on Twitter, and sometimes you just get lucky and find the right person. It's like pulling that needle out of a haystack, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because you really had no exposure to her at all. So, but the social media, you know, citizens, I guess, led you home.
Yeah. I mean, I think I was following her, and, you know, all the lawyers were on there at the time, all the handful that were, and we were following each other, but didn't really know her, got to know her over the time. And, you know, we've become good friends, and it's really wonderful.
So, you know, I think I know the answer to this already, but you go do a lot of conferences and do a lot of speaking on your podcast topic, right?
Most of my speaking is on the subject of podcast law specifically. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because I do entertainment law, it sort of comes from that angle of the way the movie folks do it, the way the TV and the radio folks do it. And here we are with podcasting, and it's a similar medium. One of the big misconceptions that folks have is it's just like radio. Well, sorry to say, different medium, different issues, different rules.
Yeah.
And that's a fact. That's sort of my mission. I want to get out there and educate people about how to do things right and safely and not find up on the wrong end of other people like me writing nasty letters and lawsuits. So,
do you find it surprising that podcasters still don't realize that there's really no use case? Everyone says there's fair use, but using copyrighted music in podcasts, that topic seems to come up almost weekly.
There's a ton of misinformation out there and armchair lawyers who think they know what they're talking about and really not seeing the practical aspects of things. And yeah, fair use is a big one. I've made a bunch of videos and I just try to point people at those and sort of given up shouting into the wind on that one.
I'm just kind of curious. I don't think I heard your synopsis of what you thought the podcast music development was with them getting, or at least it appears they're going to get some ASCAP licensing going on for, you know, maybe being able to play a minute or two of a popular music base in a podcast and paying a one-time license fee per episode. What's your thoughts on their progress?
You know, I think that what they're doing is a great thing, and I hope that it really works out well. I have my reservations that they'll be able to get a meaningful catalog of songs that podcasters want to actually use and pay for in their shows. But if they're successful, someone has to blaze this trail, and the record companies and the music publishing companies need to see that there is actually a use case where they can make a little money from this. Right now, it's so hard to get music into your show. It's four-stop shopping. You got four different kinds of licenses from three different entities you have to get. And most podcasters have neither the patience nor the resources for that. So a company like Podcast Music can really do some good if they can get the labels and publishers on board.
And I think that's that's where we're going to find out if the rubber hits the road. And for those of you that don't know, what Podcast Music did was they basically made a deal with ASCAP. They got the provisions in place, but then, you know, that's the first step. The second step is actually getting the labels to agree to the provisions and the licensing, and then what music they're going to make available in the catalog that you will be able to, like I said, you know, the use case I always like to, you know, I talk about my episode one, episode two, where I played AC/DC Black and Black in full in my episodes. Those are gone. But you know, can I play AC 2 minutes of AC/DC in a track? Can I pay for that and have that, you know, do I get to keep it in there forever? Do I have to take it out? I think all those things will be interesting to see how they work that out with the actual label holders that hold the copyright. And, you know, I think it's going to progress, but it's, you know, it's better than where we were a year ago.
Yeah. You know, every day something changes and moves forward. And ASCAP, to their credit, ASCAP has been listening to podcasters and recognizing the need, but unfortunately they're just one of many entities that have to come into the party.
And I think, you know, 5 years ago when we were talking to ASCAP, they told us, you know, 10 years, $10 million and good luck, you know, to get in it. So it's amazing how the space has changed. So you also do a second show and it's called More Better Faster. What's the skinny with that?
The subtitle of More Better Faster is success strategies for show business professionals. After, you know, all this time practicing in the field of entertainment law, I've been working with a lot of folks who succeed and a lot of folks who don't. And I think I have a pretty good handle on the things that work and what doesn't and how they get ahead. And so it's a little, you know, my side hustle, if you will, is coaching some folks to achieve bigger, better goals and get there faster. And so this is a show that I do to support that and talk about tips and tricks and strategies. And I've had a couple of interviews so far, and that's the plan, is to be talking to productivity experts and mindset folks and all that, just sort of helping people get more done.
So is it actually directed at actors, or who's the target audience on that?
It's a great question. It's show business professionals. So you tell me what that means. I like helping actors and folks like that, but most of my clients historically have been writers, directors, mm-hmm. and producers. And, you know, they all have similar issues and similar roadblocks that come up for them. And my goal is to help dismantle those.
Don't you think too is, you know, there are business people that are, you know, that's what they live. You mm-hmm. know, and maybe they've had MBAs, but then when you're a director, you're more on the artistic side, and you're not really, you know, maybe you don't have this business DNA, but you're almost forced to, right? So I'm sure that's a lot of the stuff that you have to deal with, right?
A lot of what I talk about is taking charge as the CEO of your business as an artist or creative, and really sort of showing people the way to maintain a kind of focus on the bottom line and getting toward the goal. There's so much ego and so much emotion caught up in what artists and creatives think and do and how they operate that, you know, the slightest little fumble will send them into a spiral and they don't do anything for months at a time. And so part of that is just get on the horse and stay there.
I think we have some podcasters that are the same way.
Oh, sure.
You know, and, absolutely. You know, we've got some super creative people out there. They're doing some pretty amazing stuff. And I often see too is, you know, maybe this is a show, Gordon, for podcasters that are mm-hmm. want to be podcasters. Maybe that's the target audience. I don't know, because oftentimes I'll meet people that are super creative and they're talking about doing these storylines and then yet 1, 2, 3 years, they still are kind of sitting on the fence and not getting it done. And
I think the show is helpful for pretty much anybody, podcasters, but also, I mean, I've got other lawyers that have told me that they like what I'm doing and that it helps them sort of get back to center and move forward toward their goals. And yeah, it's a new show. We're at episode 10.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, and that is a weekly show, although I missed yesterday, bad podcaster, but, I'm excited about this one. So.
Yeah. And I think that, we've had, you know, even on this show, it's hard to do weekly. You have to stay ahead of the, mm-hmm. you know, the production game, you know, and it's like, I've probably done 15 interviews in the last, you know, last week just to try to get enough in the can to get through Christmas and be ready to in the new year when people are actually, you know, thinking about content again.
Yeah.
So it's, and I understand people do weekly shows and you have to do the research and get everything ready mm-hmm. and it can be a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, one of the things on this one, I've given myself permission to have a short format, 10 minutes or so
nice.
Per episode. And when I have the interviews, they go a little longer. But, you know, one tip, in and out, have an actionable takeaway and move on. And personally, for me as a listener, that's the direction I'm headed as well. Unless I have a long drive in the car or something like that, I'm not sitting down for an hour to listen to a show.
So let me ask you a question then. So you've got this longer format show.
Yeah.
And then you get the shorter, what is there a delta in production time, or you spend about the same amount of time on both?
Well, as I said, I've got that fast, live to drive sort of approach.
Sure.
And so for me, it's, you know, press record, start talking. The prep is the hard part. Okay. And, I'll be the first to admit on More Better Faster, there's not a lot of prep. I'm
well, that's good.
Brainstorming the night before and writing up a few talking points and off I go.
So that way, you know, cause I often find times that folks that are doing short shows as compared mm-hmm. to long format shows are almost spending, end to end the same amount of time. And it,
oh yeah.
And I think too, be longer format shows, maybe just write a few, you know, quick talking points. You've got some things and you see where the conversation goes. Whereas this more focused show, oftentimes people are doing scripting where they actually, so they can stay focused. And Gary Leland was talking about this past week, and he says, you know, he does this short, you know, crypto show. He has to write out what he says. And I'm like,
of course.
So he's taken, you know, it's not even a time trade-off. He's doing a shorter show, but it's the same amount of, you know, of time. So a shorter show doesn't always equal less work. But for you, it sounds it has. You've been able to get in, get out.
Yeah. I mean, you know, my process, leaving aside the time I'm recording, is roughly the same. I mean, I don't have nearly as much pre-production that goes into the shorter show, because it's just me sort of riffing on a subject. But, you know, when I press stop on the recorder, the process is pretty much the same. It uploads, I upload to Auphonic, and then Auphonic just, you know,
drops
the file into the hosting when it's done. And so for me, that's sort of the end of my process. Write a few show notes and off I go. Right. And I have a virtual assistant who writes show notes for me.
That's good. Yeah. How's that worked out? You know, you're the first person I've talked to that has a virtual assistant that's helping you with the production. How did that process go in finding someone so that you get on the same wavelength?
So she's been with me for, I'd say, about 5 years, and she's in the Philippines. And what she does is basically, and our show notes for the Entertainment Law Update are relatively rudimentary. It's just the headline and the link to the story that we talked about. We don't get into a lot of prose on that. On More Better Faster, because I'm writing that outline, that's what she's working from. She's just sort of turning that into a post. And, you know, it works out pretty well. And I do occasionally have to go in and tweak things. But
Yeah. So how much time do you think that actually saves you then on each post? Does it save you half an hour, hour?
Oh, more than, probably an hour. Well, if I sat down and wrote the post myself, I would spend an hour doing it and formatting and all that kind of stuff.
So she takes care of that and is able to handle it. That's cool.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's even for me when I decided to have, because I have my heavy lifting's on the pre-production side. I have usually an hour and a half of work on the pre-production side of my main show. And for me, it took me some time to find, I did a shout out to my audience who's interested in doing this and who's on a time zone that will match up that they can have my pre-production done.
Right.
And I'm not sitting around waiting. And at the time, you know, I was in Hawaii and he was in the East Coast. So it was no issue. He was done 2-3 hours before me. But now we're on the same time zone. He's actually had to shift his time an hour earlier to be ready for me. But, you know, I think what it was is that we took about 3 months to kind of get in sync. And very rarely now do I have to even really kind of dig a little deeper. He's found most of the stuff that I suspect I would have found. And at least so far, it's been good. Was it the same type of kind of a time frame when you got your VA to kind of get in sync? Was it a couple month process there to be aligned or?
Yeah, it took a while. I don't remember the exact, you know, it's a while ago now, but yeah, I mean, you know, it's always going to be an adjustment. I'll tell you where the adjustment for me and the time commitment, you talk about, you know, time frames and time zones and things. On Entertainment Law Update, you know, we do a pretty deep dive into some legal topics. And so I needed to find a team of people who were, you know, qualified to write summaries so that Tamara and I can sound like we know what we're talking about. So I reached out to law students. I set up internships. So I have a team of 5 or 6. Now most of them are actually already lawyers. And there just hasn't been the kind of turnover there used to be. But so I've got 5 or 6 people who we meet every Sunday night for, you know, 15 or 20 minutes just to go over what we've seen this week, what stories will go in and what won't, what we'll keep an eye on and that kind of thing. And so we have a Zoom call on Sunday night. It's 9 p.m. Pacific time. So I've got people on the East Coast coming on a call at midnight on Sunday night. You know, 20 minutes, they can handle it. And then, you know, once a month when it's time to get ready for recording, we have them write the summaries up. And we ask them to have it done, 12, 15 hours before we start our recording generally. And that works out okay.
So you're actually, you know, and this is something new here that I haven't talked with someone before about. You're in current with that, with interns. Interns don't work for free anymore, at least not in my industry.
Well, I actually call them volunteer contributors.
Volunteer contributors. Okay, that's good. So you don't incur costs on that.
Well, there's a little bit of management and administrative costs and, you know, Christmas presents and those kinds of goodies.
Right.
But no, they're getting valuable. Well, the law students are getting valuable work experience that they put on their resumes. I write a lot of recommendation letters. Sure. And I think there's one other lawyer actually who's a retired lawyer who's just doing it because he wants to stay in the game and have some fun. And he never practiced in the entertainment field, but it's interesting. It's unfortunate. It's a sexy field where people want to be in part of it. And so they're willing to do it for free. And the time commitment isn't huge. It's a couple hours a week for them.
Oh, that's good. You know, I think, you know, it's funny because I compare, because I look at what I pay my interns here, my computer science interns. I'm like, you know, I thought interns were supposed to work for free. No, no, they don't. So I like how you titled your contributors, your voluntary contributors. And then probably the VA stuff isn't too bad either because it's offshore. You get a monthly bill for per hour. So you use an agency or did you find her direct?
I went through onlinejobs.ph and you know, set up some criteria and a test for people to take. And I interviewed three or four candidates and she was actually the second cheapest of the bunch. And, you know, she's been with me a while now, so she's gotten some raises, but it's still, you know, I pay her for a week's work what I would pay, you know, somebody locally for a day's work.
Right. So, you know, and for those of you that don't know, the average per day salary in the Philippines, if you're let's say you're a K-12, is about 400 pesos a day, which is about $8. So just please understand the delta. And some of you are shocked right now saying $8 a day. That's K-12 salaries at work. You know, like you're working at McDonald's or something. That's what they're making. So
I'm paying her well above
that.
So she's doing very well.
She's doing very well then. That's good. Well, that's interesting. And she probably is not dedicated completely to you, so she can have a couple of other clients.
No, actually, she's mine 40 hours a week. So,
she's yours 40 hours a week. Wow.
Yeah, she's doing, you know, web page updates and blog post cleanup and, you know, anything I throw at her, basically.
Wow.
And lately what I've had her doing for the podcasts is grabbing a video. I'm using Zoom when I record so that I can get a video, and she's doing a little 1-minute video clip and putting it up on Instagram and you know, doing social media promotion for me too.
Right.
And it's worth every penny.
Well, that's awesome. So you've got her 40 hours a week.
Yep.
Are you keeping her? Is she, I guess she's staying busy then, huh?
You know, I think she's probably got plenty of time on her hands.
Right.
I never feel like I shouldn't give her something more to do.
I see.
And I'm sort of okay with it. If I'm paying her, you know, double the effective hourly rate because she's only working 20 hours.
Yep.
That's okay with me.
Yep. You're getting done what you want to get done, and it's still a reasonable cost.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I have never thought about doing a VA before. And maybe it's time to look for some VA bloggers too. I don't know. I have to think about that a little bit.
You know, English language is a little bit tricky for some of the Filipinos, so you got to be careful about
that's
that.
That's true.
There are plenty of fluent English speakers.
That's right. And, you know, and matter of fact, you watch television in the Philippines, it's like intermixed between Tagalog and English. Every third word is English. It's kind of bizarre. They just flip back and forth. It's like a dice, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And sometimes, at least as an American, you can easily watch TV in the Philippines. Yeah. My first wife.
That's what happens when you're an occupying power for decades.
Yeah. My first wife was Filipina. So I've had plenty of exposure. Well, I tell you, so I guess the only thing we really haven't covered is what additionally has this brought to you? I know you do the speaking, but what doors have opened because of your show?
Well, I've gotten to be guest on a lot of other people's shows, and I'm getting my message out about the legal principles that I care about for podcasters and, you know, really serves that goal. It's made me a little bit of a celebrity in my field, both in the law community as well as in the podcasting community, which is fun. And I think my income has increased considerably as a consequence of having a show.
Awesome.
And lots of new friends, you know.
That's the key too, and that's half of it right there. Gordon, where can they, where can the Podcast Insider family find you? Where what's the best way for them to find the show and get all those details?
All right, time for the URL alphabet soup. So firemark.com is the law practice, and that's where Entertainment Law Update shows up. We cross-post on there, of course. But entertainmentlawupdate.com for that podcast. Morebetterfaster.media is the podcast that we talked about there. And pretty much find everything else about what I'm doing at gordonfiremark.com.
Well, you've definitely taken advantage of the new top-level domains. I've got
the .com wasn't available.
I got a few of those as well. I've got a couple of .dot shows and a couple of .dot medias as well. So they seem, and some .dot infos too. Those work out as well. Well, awesome. So Gordon, thanks for being on the show. Thanks for talking about your podcast journey, where you've been, where you go, and what's next, you think?
Well, actually, what's next is I'm running a podcast law boot camp coming up in a few weeks.
Ah.
And anybody who is interested in learning a little more about that, it's a wait list right now. But go on over to podlawbootcamp.com and give me your email address and I'll keep you posted. That's going to be fun. I'm going to be helping a handful of people get some of the things done that, you know, get pushed to the side. If you're interested, let me know.
Outstanding. All right, everyone, that was Gordon Firemark. And we want to thank him for being on Podcast Insider. Of course, again, we want to thank Gordon for appearing on the Podcast Insider. And it's going to move to support. And actually, that's kind of ironic. I said move. Maybe I got triggered because of your first topic here, Mike. Moving to Blueberry.
Yeah. You know, people move to Blueberry and people, unfortunately, move away from Blueberry. In either case, before you make that move, get a hold of support. You know, if you have any questions on how to do that seamlessly, or get a hold of your new host if you're moving away. But specifically, if you're moving in, you know, we are the experts in moving people in from just about every other platform. And I run into it so many times, people make the move on their own and they forget to do the redirect, and now they no longer have have access to their old feed, and you know, you lose subscribers and all of that. So it's a lot better. I'd rather speak to you for a half an hour and, you know, explain to you the steps on how to do this, you know, properly from whatever platform you're on now. And, you know, we don't want you to lose listeners. And like I said, even going the other way, yeah, you know, it's bad for us because we're losing a customer, losing a user. But I would much rather you not lose your subscribers because you might be back.
And you should talk to your ongoing host if you're leaving us.
Exactly.
To make sure that they help you in this transition as well and understand their steps. Now, here's some things that triggered this. We've known some podcasters have moved from certain podcast hosts recently, and they canceled their account and the company canceled their redirect. Even though the company says they're big on supporting redirects, once you quit paying them, they stop doing the redirect. So we'll have some advice for customers that are coming from that particular client. And of course, you always want to ask the hosting company that you're leaving, ask them, how long do you leave the redirect in place? And here's the key. Now, Blueberry does it forever when you leave for a Blueberry-based feed. If you are a PowerPress user, you are in control of that yourself.
As long as you own the domain, you got the redirect.
You own that. But we definitely say 30 to 60 days as a minimum when you're leaving someone. Do you want the redirect to be up? And, you know, and I like it to be up forever for the stragglers. But again, 30 to 60 days is typically a good period to make sure that the redirect is online, to make sure that all the listeners have been updated and have moved.
Yeah, you'll get all of them that are paying attention. That's what I always like to say.
So anyway, that's what's going on. So let's talk a little bit about one more thing about Spotify. We've had some slowness in feeds updating. We're aware of the issue. And one of our top devs is working on that. So that is something in work. But if you definitely see an update happening slowly on Spotify, just drop us a line and let us know. We're keeping an eye on this. We know that there is a little issue. And some of it's part of this pass-through that we're going to. So I'm not trying to make excuses, but we do know that there's a little bit of slowness right now in the feeds updating, because we have to send Spotify a not your feed. We have to send them a mirrored feed. That's part of the agreement we have with them. And so those are updating a little bit slower. So let's talk about adding third-party stats redirect, Mike.
Yeah, you know, we've got a few of these stats redirect companies out there now that are coming online, and they're new. And, you know, one in particular has a form letter that, here, click here if you're on Blueberry, and it sends a form letter to our support. And the problem with that is, A, the redirect, or not the, you know, the stats redirects are done at the PowerPress level. That's on your site. That's not us that does that. But also in PowerPress, as we talked about, you know, before, some redirects are allowed in PowerPress and some are not. And they're not allowed due to, we don't know how reliable they are. We don't know, you know, what their privacy policies are, whether they're GDPR compliant, as we're, you know, like I said, that's what Todd was talking about with, you know, they're talking to Chartable and getting an agreement there. But some of them, you know, we have checked out. So, you know, depending on which redirect you want, you either have to put it in yourself every time you publish an episode. And it's pretty simple. You just stick the redirect between the https://, and the rest of the URL in the media URL box. But you have to do it for every episode. We do have an automatic setting for those approved redirects. I think PodTrack is one of them, and there's a few others that are already approved. And if they are, we'll tell you that and tell you how to do that. It's fairly simple. But for those that have not been approved yet, you do that at your own risk, but you have to do it manually. And we'll have a little instructional page that we'll send you that shows you how to do that. But like I said, it's at your own risk because, you know, if that redirect goes down, your media is no longer online. And
right.
It has nothing to do with us. It's 100%, you know, it's a brick wall at that redirect. So, you know, that's why we test them and all of that before we allow them to be in PowerPress.
And, you know, it goes a little deeper, too, as we want to know their failover. You know, let's say a server fails. What happens when their server fails? Do they have another? Do they have something in place to ramp up and take over redirect services? You know, we know from doing this for many, many years, for 14 years here, that the redirect can never go down. It just can't. It has to stay up because as soon as the redirect goes down, then you're basically offline. No one can get your content. Active play or subscribe, nothing. It's just, again, it's dead air. There's no file being delivered. So again, as Mike said, and I want to basically readdress this again, you do this at your own risk when you add someone that we haven't tested or, and also from a privacy standpoint, you need to ask those questions, what they're doing with your media, what their policies are, because after all, it is your listener that you're exposing to their redirect, and you want to make sure that, you know, it follows the policies that you think are appropriate for your show. And that's the thing that's the key here. Now, if you're a Blueberry publishing customer, then you reach out to the team and we can help you with some of this as well. But again, for those of you that are PowerPress, just be aware, you know, we white label folks for a reason. And it's because we've tested and we trust the source and we know that your media is not going to be offline. At least, you know, there's something can always happen, but we have much, much higher confidence that there's not going to be an issue because the first people you're going to call is us. You're going to be screaming at us saying, why? Why is this not done? Why is this? Why is my media offline? And when we test and we find out it's not us, it's your redirect provider, we've just wasted whatever time it took us to get to the ticket and then redirecting you to go complain to the other provider. So, and again, hosting customers, you don't have to use the redirect. Your stats are going to be automatically collected. But anyway, that's where we're at with this. So I think we're about done, Mike. Any, oh, by the ways?
No, everything, I think we covered everything we had in the list there.
So anyway, if you want to reach me or Mike, it's Todd@blueberry.com, Mike@blueberry.com, Mackenzie@blueberry.com. And we will be happy to take your submissions for the show or have an idea if you want to be interviewed. Hey, thanks for being a customer. Thanks for podcasting with us. We'll be back next week with another edition of Podcast Insider.